Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the Moments of Joy podcast. I'm your host, and my name is Camille Joy, and I want to say welcome to all of my MVP listeners. You know who you are, and I call you that because you come back week after week to experience the joy. So thank you guys for coming back. Once again, to all of my first-time listeners, I would like to invite you to listen to some of the previous episodes and find out a little bit more about this show. On this podcast, we share testimonies and we share deliverance and healing and overcoming that has happened in people's lives. People go through really difficult things: rape, molestation, abuse, divorce, heart conditions, all kinds of disease, and sometimes, all the time, you can overcome by the blood of the Lamb. And so, in the words of your testimony. And so this is the place where we release them to share their stories of overcoming in order to encourage you, the one who is listening, so that you know that you too can be free and that you too can find joy again. And so that's what we're here to do. I'm excited about this show. Before I get started, if you have not purchased your copy of There's a Jewel in You, Volume 3, where I am a co-author, I want to invite you to do so on my website. I will post that in the description of the show. And that's camille-joy.com/shop. Today's show is going to be really powerful. I have a guest on the show, and her name is Miss Nina Perez. She is a wonderful, powerful woman with an amazing story of overcoming so many things. And I invited her on the show to encourage you all. And so we're going to get right into the show. I don't like to prolong my intros when I have guests. So guys, brace yourselves and get ready for this amazing story. Here we go. Welcome to the show.
I need the joy. The joy of the Lord in my heart. I need to make an exchange. My day even start. Let your light shine. All through my life. My heart is open and I am ready to receive your joy.
And so we have Miss Nina Perez today. Nina, welcome to the Moments of Joy podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Camille. Thank you.
You are so welcome. So it's a quick introduction about Miss Nina. I ran across her story on Facebook. You know, the wide world of Facebook. We meet all kinds of new people. But I was blown away of her story of overcoming so much. And I thought that she would be the perfect fit, because that's what we do here on the show, to come on the Moments of Joy podcast. So we'll just chat a little bit about your story. Is that okay, Nina?
Absolutely. That's what I'm here for.
Yes. So just start us off and take us into your childhood and how you grew up.
So I am born and raised in Connecticut, and I came from pretty broken family, you would say. So, you know, I wrote a book, and in the book I wrote a little bit about what I've gone through as a child. So I have a mother whom I love, and me and her have gotten to a much better place. But my mom was married and my dad was married. They just weren't married to each other. And so I was the result of that relationship. And so I think, you know, growing up, in a home where you kind of always felt like you weren't connected. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of grew up always trying to make my own way. I always felt like a little adult, you know, in a little kid's body. Yeah. But I think, you know, people, at least I'm learning this as I'm getting older, is that when people don't have what they can't give you, you know, like if they're broken, they are broken, you know, it's hard for them right. to give you anything more than what they have. Absolutely. You know? So as you get older, you start to realize that there's a lot of things that you didn't understand as a child. And now as an adult, you're like, okay, I get it. I get why right. I grew up the way I did. Yeah. So we grew up, you know, very, you know, impoverished, you know, just always, my mom was always supplying. We always did have what we needed. But you know, we didn't have any luxuries or anything. We grew up in the, I grew up in the projects in Stamford. It used to be called the Village. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's just how we grew up. I mean, we did the best we could. I grew up between my mother's house and my grandparents' house.
Okay. So as a result of you being born to someone who was married, was he there?
Oh, absolutely not. Okay. So when I was born, his wife told him that he had to choose between me or his current children. And he chose their family, of course. So I never got his last name, never was, you know, claimed or anything by him. My mother was married, as I said earlier. So her husband was furious because it turned out that he was infertile. So he couldn't have children. So he wasn't understanding how she got pregnant, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't very pretty. So she and he ended up splitting at some point because he, from what I've heard through the stories in the family, he like nearly killed her. So she ended up splitting from that. And then she had other relationships that caused, you know, some damage also. Like I know there was one of her boyfriends that dislocated my shoulders. There was, you know, there was, a stepfather that I did get to know. He came into my life when I was about 3 years old. And he was in my life till about, I think, 10 years old. So at the age of about five to six, that's when he started touching me. So he started molesting me at about 5 or 6 years old. Jeez. And lasted for a little while. It lasted for a couple of years, longer than it should have. Mm-hmm. Thankfully he left that when I was around 10 years old. So that was good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you were able to break free from that. Wow.
Yeah, I think I was. I mean, I don't know if I ever broke free from it, Camille. You know, I kind of broke free from it as an adult.
Right.
But I don't think I broke free from it as a child. I kind of just, you know, you suppress things and children are resilient, right? So even though they're going through pain, you kind of like cover it up and you keep it moving, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. So, your book says that you became a teen mom.
I did. So, you know, being that my mother had now a new husband at the age of 10. So my stepfather left and then she got a new husband. Mm. And, you know, it was all kind of focused on him. I had two little brothers, by the way, by my stepfather, the one that was molesting me. I had two little brothers from him. You know, my mother had two little brothers and they were awesome. And then my mother met this new man and then she had a daughter with her. So there's four of us in total, my mom's house.
Okay.
And so when I was about 13 years old, I met a boy. He was 17. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody really ever spoke to me about boyfriend, girlfriend stuff. It's not something we discussed. Mm-hmm. We never talked about sex in our home. We didn't talk about anything. I mean, that's just, you just ignored things, you know? So I met this boyfriend and he was the one teaching me everything. So at the age of 13, I was already starting to be sexually active. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was in eighth grade in middle school, I remember just not feeling well. It was towards the end of the year. And one of the other kids said, "Hey, you're pregnant." And I was like, "Oh, shoot. Am I pregnant?" You know, because I'm like 14 years old and I'm thinking how to, you know, I didn't even know how to prevent not being pregnant, you know, like ignorance, you know?
Mm-hmm,
so, so we went to Planned Parenthood and sure enough, I was pregnant. So eighth grade, about to graduate eighth grade, go into high school. And I had to tell my mom, I'm like, "Oh shoot. I don't know how I'm going to tell her. She's going to beat me, you know?" So I found a friend of hers and I was like, "Listen, I don't know how to tell my mom, but I'm pregnant," and all this other stuff. And so we told her. She was infuriated, of course, and she didn't speak to me for most of my pregnancy. But I was 14 when I was pregnant and then 15 when I had my son. You know, I think the hardest part in this was that his father was severely abusive. You know, even before I was pregnant, I already tried to commit suicide when I was about 13 years old because I mean, the beatings were just so bad, and
wow,
the violence was just so bad. I was like, you know, why am I here? And he was always making sure that he let me know that I wasn't worth anything and that nobody wanted me, and all that kind of, you know, stuff that abusers do, you know? So, and when you're growing up in a place where you don't really feel like you're loved, you were molested as a child, you know, you feel like nobody wants you because you're back and forth between your mom and your grandmom's house. Right. You know, you just feel like you're wandering, and you're, you know, and then this kid tells you, hey, I love you. You fall into it really quickly. And before you know it, I mean, he's beating you too. So it's almost like, okay, this is just what, like, kind of like what you deserve, or kind of like who you think you are, which is nothing, right? Because my stepfather was not only abusive, you know, sexually, but he was also very physically abusive as well. So, you know, it's like, it's almost like you almost get accustomed to this pattern of abuse, you know?
Yeah. So yeah.
When I was pregnant with my son, I mean, you know, he used to beat me while I was pregnant. I mean, he threw me down the stairs. I mean, it was just crazy stuff. So I had my son when I was about 15 years old, and I looked at that little life and I said, that's it. I cannot, you know, I could just have to live now for him, because if not, I would have just taken my life. You know, it just would have been easier to check out, I think.
Absolutely. You know, I just recently, this past week, sat down with a group of eighth graders to talk to them. I talked to them about abusive relationships, because statistics are real and they're true, and they show that teenagers are the ones that are entering into these abusive relationships. I did, you did, and they will if they don't, you know, stop the path that they're going down now. But they were shocked to hear that as well.
Yeah, and you know what?
That is so true.
Some of them are probably shocked, but some of them are probably going right through it and just don't know how to see it. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, nobody talked to me about this, especially in eighth grade. Who was talking to anybody? There was nobody talking to me about this.
Wow.
So, you know, and when you have a family that chooses to hide secrets and ignore things that are in their face, it's even more hard, you know? So it's like, how do you tell your mom? You know, when I told my mom that my stepfather was touching me, she got down to my face and she said, you shut up and you stop lying.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Wow. So as a child, you're like, okay, nobody believes me. I can't say anything. And my mom is mad at me now, you know? So, you know, when you're 5 or 6 years old, that's a big deal, you know? And then when you get older, how do you tell anybody that this man is beating you?
Right.
You know, it's embarrassing. You're walking around with bruises and you're trying to explain them away. You know, and you love him, right? So that's the thing. Like, but I love him. But I love him. Oh my gosh. I remember those days, and I'm like, how did I not love myself enough? You know? And it's because when you're not, I mean, this is probably not everybody's case, but I feel like when you're not shown your worth from the beginning, and you're not shown, you know, how much you mean to not just your parents, but to God from the beginning. It's hard for you as a human to grapple with yourself and say, oh, I'm worth this.
That's right.
You know, because that's, I think, right, that we always have an enemy that's going to tell you opposite of that. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it could even come from bullying in school. Maybe you do have good parents.
Yes.
You know? And maybe you were raised well, but there's like these meanies at school, or, you know, at work or wherever. There's always, you know, there's always, words are powerful. Camille, right? I mean, words are super powerful. You know, most of us can get out of these abusive relationships, but it's the prison of our mindset, because of what people have said to us, that keeps us there.
Oh, that's powerful. Yes, that's so true. Wow. And so how do you continue on after you've had the baby? Do you go to school?
So when I had my son, I was entering into high school. So the high school system, you know, this is 1988, right? So this was not like a norm. So they didn't let me go to regular high school. They were trying to make me go to a mother parenting class or something that they had invented somewhere. And and I was like, no, I want to go to high school. I want to finish high school, not a special program for a GED. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but this is what I wanted, you know?
Right.
And so they wouldn't let me in school until I had the baby. So I had the baby in January. So I had to get to school right after I had him, 2 weeks later, I enrolled myself into high school, ninth grade, and I had to like get straight A's from that day to the end of the school year in order for them to accept me. So I was able to do that that first year because I was determined. But after that, it was working two jobs and going to school. But I did it. I mean, my goal was I didn't want my child, my son, to say, well, you didn't finish high school, so why should I? So
that's phenomenal. That's phenomenal right there. I just work two jobs and go to school with a child in your teenage years. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I had to do something, right? So because my I already felt worthless enough, you know. Right. I didn't want my son to A, see me as worthless, and B, ever think he's not worth it. Right. You know, because I feel like I already felt that way. I didn't need him to feel that way. You know, so I felt like if I could just get through high school, you know, and that's what I did. And so when I was about 17 years old, his dad, you know, after so many beatings and so much abuse, one day I get home and he's in the room and I come up and I'm like, hey, he's like, hey. And he looked completely different. Like his eyes were like blacked over. He just looks at me. He goes, where were you? And I'm like, I was in school, you know? And he's like, no, I know you weren't in school. You were probably out with some other guy, this and that. And if I can't have you, nobody can. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I knew because every day was a beating and a fight anyway, right? So this was just another typical day, but this felt different. And I just remember him turning around. He says, I'm going to kill you. I'm killing the baby. And then I'm killing myself.
My gosh.
And
wow.
I said, I'm like, what are you talking about? And then I see the gun in his hand and I'm like, oh shoot. So your mind automatically goes to quick defense mode, you know? So I took the baby and I'm like, okay, honey, go to grandma, you know? And cause we lived with my mom at the time and I pushed the baby out the door and he's like, nope, I'm going to kill you. I'm killing the baby. I'm killing myself. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. Why are you acting this way? He goes, if I can't have you, nobody can. He started getting himself all worked up and I'm trying to calm him down. And all I remember, is us back and forth. And then I'm trying to tell him how much I love him. Cause all I'm thinking is defense mode. You know, and he comes up to me and he cocks the gun back and puts it to my forehead and he says, I'm telling you, I can't live without you. And if you leave me, I can't live. So I'm killing you, the baby, and myself. And he pulls the trigger.
Oh my God.
All I remember is just shutting my eyes and like, that's it. I'm gone. You know, so I shut my eyes. He pulled the trigger, but the safety on the trigger got jammed.
Oh. My gosh.
If that is not the Lord, okay, and I don't know what it is. And I was just like you can't breathe, right? You're trying to now what do you do, right? So I can't breathe. He's trying to unjam it. He's like, you know, trying to unjam the system. And I'm like, and I'm grabbing his arm. I'm like, sweetheart, you know, I love you. Why would you think like that? This is ridiculous. Don't do this. Don't hurt our family. And he's like, no, you know, I'm going to, and he's trying to unjam it. And I'm like, stop, calm down. And I'm like, in my head, although I didn't really have a relationship with God, I was calling on the Lord.
Yes.
In my head, I'm like, God, if you're real, God, if you're real, you know?
Yes.
And I'm just like, I finally got him to calm down. And I said to him, why would you do that? You know, I love you. And he kind of looked like he came back to normal. It's kind of weird, Camille, because, you know, it's not like, you know, I really thought, is he demonically possessed when this was happening, right?
Right.
But
right.
In hindsight, I'm like, right. He was demonically possessed.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You know, like his eyes were completely like dark. I mean, it was really an unusual sight, you know? Mm-hmm. So I got him to calm down. I made him dinner. Everybody's calm. You know, he went to sleep. I took the gun and I put it to his head.
Wow.
And while he was sleeping, and I said, okay, if I get rid of him now, I can be free. This is what I was thinking. And then, of course, the safety is not even jammed this time, right? I mean, that's just how it works, right? Now I feel like I can kill him and I'll be fine. But then I turn around and my baby's sleeping in the crib. Right. And I say, wait a minute, if I do this, he dies, maybe, but I go to jail for life.
Right.
My mother has to raise my kid. I don't know. You know? Absolutely. I don't think so. So I said, okay, this is, I got up, I took the gun, I went across the street, and I gave the gun to a friend of mine, and I said to him, hey, listen, this gun, can you do something with this? He said, oh yeah, that's my gun. I said, excuse me? He said, yeah, your boyfriend told me he needed it because some guys were messing with him and he needed protection. And I said, no,
my gosh.
He tried to kill us with it. He's like, what? And he took the gun from me. He goes, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I said, I keep telling you guys that he abuses me and you don't believe me, you know? I said, and you gave him the gun and he could have killed us. And he's like, oh my gosh, and I'll never do that again. And I'm so sorry. And so, you know, yeah. I mean, I was in the projects. Guns were everywhere, you know? It's not like it was a hard thing to find, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so I went right back to sleep. I acted like nothing. Got up the next day, gave him his kiss goodbye. He went off. I went off to the bus. I pretended I was anyway. I had my girlfriend meet me in the corner. I waited for him to go to work and I ran into my house before my mother got up or anything because I knew she would stop me. I got my baby, put everything in a garbage bag, and off I went to the battered women's shelter.
Wow.
Had to save.
Oh my goodness. Well, and how old were you at that point?
17.
Oh my gosh, how courageous.
I had to do something. I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. You know what was really scary is that night, I'll never forget feeling so afraid, like, what am I going to do now, right? I still have to go to school. I didn't finish school yet. I'm in my last year. So I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I'm like, okay, so I'm in the battered women's shelter. They finally gave me a room. My son is playing on the windowsill and he says, hey, daddy. I'm like, oh. So I grab my son out the windowsill and I'm like, oh my gosh. And the women in the room turn off the light. We look out the window and my boyfriend is waving at me from the parking lot. And my heart fell to my feet and I'm like, he found me. How in the world did he find me? You know, so I'm like freaking out. And I'm like, wait, the only way he could have found me is if my mom told him because she saw she had seen a pamphlet in the house. So I think, you know, so I called her and I said, mom, I said, I just wanted to let you know that I'm okay, that I'm with the baby, blah, blah. She goes, oh, I know where you are. And I said, did you tell him where I was?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yep. And I hope he found you. I said, mom. He was trying to kill me. He put a gun to my head. He told me he was going to kill me. He was going to kill the baby and himself.
Wow.
How could you tell him that? And I just never, ever forget the words. Well, good. He should have done it.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, he should have done it because you deserve it. You should have never taken the baby or something like that. And I just felt my world just shatter into like pieces. And I was like, wow, mom. Wow.
Yeah. You know,
I'm like, I can't even believe you just said that. And and she goes, no, you're going to pay. You're going to pay for taking the baby. You're going to pay as it's my baby, you know? So I just hung up the phone and I was like, I cannot believe this is happening. The women there were kind of, they were cool. And they were like, listen, we're not going to tell, but if he comes back, we're going to have to tell because now you're putting us at risk.
Wow.
You know? So long story short, I tried to avoid him everywhere I could. But this man was he was a terror. He was a terror. Uh-huh. I lived in a shelter for a year.
Uh-huh.
He left me alone for a little while, but then he would pop out, you know, like if I'm walking somewhere, he would just pop out from behind a tree or behind a car, you know, meet me at the parking lot at school. Or it was awful. It was awful. It was like a nightmare.
Right. Wow. That is just
insane.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And then at such a young age.
It's so hard too, right? Because you always feel vulnerable. You feel like nobody's there for you. You feel alone. You feel scared all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this constant ball of fear in your stomach where you're always feeling like tight. You know, it's an awful feeling when you're in an abusive relationship. You don't know what you're walking into. Is he happy today? Is he sad today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he leaving me alone today? And the thing is, you know, people always say, why did you stay that long? Or why do women stay? That's ridiculous. I would leave. Like, no, that's not how it works.
No.
it comes slowly, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like he beats you the first day you're on a date.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I think people don't remember that, don't realize that, you know, and mm-hmm. people have been abused understand that it is a very slow process.
Absolutely.
And it's a very scary process. See, I was more afraid to mm-hmm. be without him
right.
than to be with him. Because when wow. I was with him, I knew what I was getting, right? Okay, you come home today, you measure it. Okay, how is he today? Okay, let me not trigger anything. Let mm-hmm. me be careful how I speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and stuff like that. But when you're not with him,
mm-hmm.
now you don't know, is he coming out from behind a tree? You
wow.
know, is he breaking into the house? Because sometimes I would wake up in the middle of the night and he's standing at the foot of my bed. How did he do that? You know,
wow.
and it's like he got in through a window and he would just come and sit there and watch me. Like,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, like, what? It was crazy. It was crazy. Yes.
Oh, the grace of God that kept you in there. He was not a total lunatic.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Seriously.
Jeez. Talk to us a little bit about young adulthood. How does that shift and where do you continue to go?
So when I was finally about 18, 19, he met another girl. I was so happy. I met this girl and I was like, can I speak to you? And she's like, you know, are we going to get into a fight? You know?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I said, so you're dating him? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, thank you.
Thanks
so much. And she's just looking at me like, what? And I'm like, just keep him happy, keep him busy, keep him happy. And she's like, okay, you know, and I mean, I probably should have wanted to help her, but honestly, I wasn't thinking about her. I was thinking about survival is what
Absolutely.
I was thinking about. And so when he was about, I think 19, I was about 19 or so. And he fell in love with this girl, thank God. So the following me around became less and less and less, which was mm-hmm. awesome. And mm-hmm. then I met a new boy at mm-hmm. a club and we dated
mm-hmm.
and got I got pregnant at 20 years old. We dated for about, I think it was like almost a year or 6 months to a year, something like that. And I got pregnant and then he asked me to marry him. So we got married and I was 21.
Okay.
And that marriage was weird because I knew that he wasn't the one, but
mm-hmm.
because I was pregnant, I didn't want to make the same mistake I did with my first kid, which
right.
was having somebody, you know, having him out of wedlock and all that
right.
kind of stuff. And so I'm like, maybe I should, you know, so I did, I got married. I mean, he wasn't an abuser in physical sense.
Right.
He was more of a manipulator emotionally,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it was more like constant lying, constant manipulating situations. You know, he was more like the one that takes your credit and destroys it type of guy, you know? Somebody's like, oh, what about me? What about me? What about
mm-hmm.
me? So everything was about him.
So right.
I found myself constantly giving up lots of dreams and lots of, you know, want to's in my life because he needed to have what he wanted first,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's a weird dynamic, isn't it? Because you come from an extremely abusive relationship and now this is more of an emotional, manipulation, abusive relationship. So it's a little bit different, but it's still abuse.
It's still,
you know,
abuse.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you don't know that. So you kind of like, oh, you know, I paid, you know, we all sacrificed. I went for him to go to school. I worked while he went to school away from the mm-hmm. house.
Wow.
And, you know, and then he took the kids' social security numbers while he was away at school and claimed the taxes himself,
kept
all the money and bought himself a motorcycle. It's like mm-hmm. all this weird stuff that he did. And I'm just like, how can you do that? I was like,
right.
I have two kids. Like, what are you doing? You know,
yes.
I want a motorcycle. I never get what I want. And I'm like, you know, you're in school, right?
Right.
I think you're getting what you want. I'm not understanding,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
But it was a constant, like, you know, finding out afterwards how many, you know, like women he had behind my back and, you know, and how much, like, just all the, like the amazing amount of lies. And then it wasn't until now, because I'm divorced, that I realized that he has an ailment. You know, I think he
right.
has a pathological liar and
mm-hmm.
there's a problem there, you know? So now I know that, you know,
right.
I didn't know that when it was happening to me.
Oh, absolutely.
It's quite a journey I've been on. Let me tell you.
So, yeah. And so you did divorce him.
Oh, I did. Yes. We were married 8 years.
Okay.
And right before we got divorced, which is like his last little icing on the cake for me, was like right before we got divorced, I had now met the man I'm currently with, my husband now. We've been together. Mm-hmm. In fact, Sunday will be 20 years. But oh, wow. We've been together. Okay. And I just remember my ex-husband, he just... So before we got divorced, he got up one day and he's like packing up his bags. And I'm like, where are you going? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I need to go find myself. And I'm like, there's a mirror right there. Look, you're right. Found. What are you right. talking about? You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, you're married with two kids. What are you?
Right.
I don't understand. He's like, I need to go find myself. I'm not happy here. I need to find myself. That's what I need to do. And I'm like, this is crazy. So he got up and left me. He left me and the kids, abandoned wow. us, and just left. Left financially, left physically, left emotionally, just left. Mm. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I didn't know what to do. I'm like, what am I doing? What's happening? So I had to tell my kids.
Right.
You know, dad is finding himself. I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. But you know, I went into a severe depression and my kids went through severe changes. Like, at the time my son was about 13, my oldest, the one I had when I was a teenager, he was about 13 yeah. and, he started overeating. So he gained an enormous amount of weight. Mm-hmm. And then my younger one, who at the time was about 5 years old, started, reverting to peeing in the bed, having behavioral issues, you know, yeah. telling me, mommy, just tell him that I'll behave. He can come mm-hmm. back home. I'll behave. And I'm like, honey, mm-hmm. this is not about you, sweetheart. Right. And I think this is one of the biggest things that hurt us as moms who stay behind with our kids, right? It's just, yeah. now we have to let them know that they are worthy. Now that's we have right. to let them understand that this is not about them. But that's really hard, Camille. Like, how do you tell your kid, who also is attached to this other person, that they're abandoning me, the woman, not abandoning you guys. They yeah. love you, or sometimes they do abandon them, you know. But mm-hmm. it's like, you are worthy and you are worth it. You know, these that's people right. make stupid decisions because they're stupid. It has nothing to do with you, mm-hmm. you know. Right. And that's a very hard thing for a kid to get. I know for me, when my father didn't claim me, I never felt wanted, mm-hmm. you know? So it's such a difficult thing because you always, not only am I dealing with the fact that I'm being left again, right? Or that I'm being unwanted again, but now I have to deal with my kids now feeling unwanted.
Yeah.
Left, you know?
Yeah.
It was a really hard thing.
Yeah. I have on my schedule here mm-hmm. faith. Mm-hmm. And so when does that come in? When does your faith come in? And when do you begin to learn about God and a relationship with Him?
Okay, so I was born and raised Catholic, and then mm-hmm. I kind of left Catholicism. And I kind of floated around with whether or not God was really real or not. Did he even exist? You know, so kind of agnostic. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to feel. And mm-hmm. then as I got older, when my ex-husband left me, I got into a religion called Santeria. And Santeria is worshiping like all these African saints and stuff like that. It's basically, they call it white magic or voodoo, but it's like mm-hmm. white voodoo, if you will, which is BS. It's all voodoo, right?
Yeah.
So I got into that, like, you know, lighting candles and doing all these rituals and all this kind mm-hmm. of stuff. And I did that for about 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. and I was dating my now husband at the time. He hated right. it. Mm-hmm. I did that, but I thought it was the right thing. And mm-hmm. then, so this is how, I always say, this is how Jesus woke me up, because I feel like he's always been there, but I just was ignoring him, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. so I was lighting my candle to do my rituals. And in this particular ritual, you light two candles. One is a black candle that you light to the African saint. That's your mediator. And then the other one is a candle to Jesus, who is who he's mediating to. So you
that is so funny,
isn't it? you pray to this, these African saints or gods or whatever you want to call them. And mm-hmm. they then go to God or Jesus and then tell Jesus what it is you're requesting and blah, blah, blah. And then the way it works is that these, saints are actually the ones that give you power, or, you know, they give you possessions and they give you, you know, stability, and they, you know, take away your enemies. Like, they're basically like, they almost position them as your warrior angels, if you will. Right. Mm-hmm. So you pray to these saints thinking, oh, I'm going to have wealth and power and all this other stuff. It's all BS, right? But this is what you do. So I was lighting the candle, and I felt ridiculous. And I'm looking and I'm saying, wait a minute. What am I doing? Almost like somebody peeled something off of my eyes. And I'm sitting there in complete astonishment. Like, this doesn't feel right. Uh-huh. So I turned off the match that was in my hand, and I'm like, wait, Jesus, wait, hold on. It was like almost like, I don't know how to explain it, but it was almost like a surreal moment. And I just fell to the floor, and I was like, wait a minute, Jesus, is something, am I doing something wrong? Mm-hmm. Is this wrong? You know, mm-hmm. So I'm like crying and weeping, and I'm like, Jesus, please, if God, if you're real, you know, if you tell me that you're real and you show me that you're real, I just don't understand what's happening. And I cried and I cried, cried the whole night, and I fell asleep on the floor. I woke up the next morning, got my kids ready for school. I got myself ready, and I went to work. And that night, that day while I was at work, my home, the apartment that we were in, caught on fire. And my kids, you know, thank God, got out of the house okay. Everything was fine. But long story short, I came back to the house and I see this gaping hole, what used to be my kids' room. And I'm like, God, if this is you, this isn't funny. You know, like, I don't know if this is the way you're telling me this is you, but this is not, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I said, wait a minute, maybe it's the saints, saints, because they say that if you turn your back on the religion, that the saints come back after you, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way they keep you in, right?
Right. So, okay.
So I'm like, oh my God, is it the saints? Is it this? Is it this? I'm like freaking out. So, you know, we went homeless, of course, because we had no home. And so long story short, about like a month later, I say to my aunt, I'm like, listen, oh no, before that, I this is how I actually found that Jesus was real. So my house went on fire. I called the insurance company. The insurance company says, nope, you are not covered. Mm-hmm. We had you overlapsed on your insurance like 6 months ago. We're so sorry, blah, blah, blah. And I started weeping and crying because we had zero money. So what are we going to do? So I'm on the floor. My husband just lost his business. I mean, we had no money. So I'm like, oh my gosh. So I called the insurance company again, and they were like, nope, sorry, you're really, you're canceled. So I grabbed the paper. I sit on the floor and I said, Jesus, if you are real and you prove to me that you are real, I promise you, I will follow you all the days of my life, and I will not let you go. And I just started crying and crying and crying. And then the next day, I hear a knock at the door, and we open the door, and there's the guy from Allstate.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, I know. I said to him, can I help you? He's like, yes. Nina Perez. I said, yes. He goes, well, I'm from Allstate, and I don't know why, but I really needed to look into your account. And sure enough, you really are covered. And we are here to make sure that we give you what you need. And I'm like, so I turned around, I looked at my husband, and I'm like, Jesus is real.
Wow.
But that's how I found him. I mean, there's so many more stories as to what Jesus has done in my life, but that is exactly how he woke me up, put it that way. Yeah. I always feel like he just, oh man, he woke me up. I don't know how to explain it.
And that's so powerful. And I thank you for sharing that little piece, because there are people out here operating in witchcraft and they just don't know.
Yeah. No,
they
you
just
don't.
Don't know.
Yeah. And I could tell you by doing it that they let you feel like what you're doing is God's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how you feel like. At least in Santeria, that's how you feel, because you feel like, you know, somehow God is mixed in there. You know, but it really is a very demonic religion. Very demonic.
Wow. So I thank you. Talk to us a little bit about Nina today.
So Nina today. So God, a few years ago, just kind of did the same thing, kind of woke me up again. And I was a medical assistant and an ultrasound technician for 15 years. And I was thinking that I was going to be like maybe in the medical field somehow, maybe go back to school. And I just felt like God kept saying, go back to school and be a chef. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't make any sense. What is that? You know? So again, I hear it again. I hear it. So finally I said to God, I said, okay, God, this is another God moment. So I said, okay, God, here's the deal. Cause I'm always trying to make deals with God. Like I could do that, you know, I said, here's the deal, God. If you come down here physically and you say to me that I am released to quit my job and go to school to be a chef, I'll do it. But mm-hmm. I need to hear you come down here physically and say to me that I am released. If you right. say that, I will do it. Mm-hmm. I kid you not, Camille. Maybe like 45 minutes later, my husband's coming home from work. Mm-hmm. He comes inside the bedroom. He says, hey, honey, listen, I was driving home and praying. I said, okay. He said, and I don't know what this means, but I really feel like I heard God say, go inside and tell your wife I said she is released.
Wow.
I said, excuse me? I almost fell out the bed. I almost fell out the bed because how can he use the exact same word?
Right.
Possible. That is impossible. Like, I literally just told God, if you tell me I am released, and my husband walks into the room and says, God said to tell you that you are released. I'm like, what? Oh, yeah. Girl, that freaked me out. I was like, okay, quit my job. Went back to school. Long story short, I was homeless while I was in school, but we did it. I don't know how. And now I am an executive chef and a manager. And then I also.
Yeah, me too.
You are?
I didn't know that about you.
I didn't know that. Are you serious?
I'm an executive chef.
Get out of here, Camille. Don't even.
That is so funny.
Wow. Oh, so we're kindred
sisters. Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, so I'm an executive chef and a manager. And then I have, as you know, a podcast and a blog and wrote a book. And now I just started a TV show.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's awesome. Oh, then we got to talk more.
We do. Absolutely. That's awesome. Yeah. So before we close out the show, I would like you to share a special message that you may have geared towards people who may see themselves in any part of your story.
So there are five things that I learned writing my book and looking at my life. And I did a whole series called the Fight Back series on my podcast. It's called my podcast is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Yes. And the five things I learned is how important it is of overcoming shame. How important it is to have forgiveness in your life. There's a lot of power in forgiveness. Mm-hmm. How to stand in your truth, because standing in your truth will really validate all you've gone through and standing in what you believe, right? Mm-hmm. Letting go so that I can receive more in my life. So letting go had a lot to do with forgiving. Mm-hmm. And then dreaming bigger than I thought. You know, so those are the five things. So overcoming shame, the power of forgiveness, stand in your truth, let go so that you can receive more, and then dream big. Those are the five things, because overcoming shame, you know, is a really hard one, you know, because you always are carrying I don't know what everybody's gone through, but I know for me, my experience was that I was carrying shame that did not belong to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. I did not need to be ashamed that I was molested. I didn't ask for that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that. I don't need to be ashamed that I was in a domestic violent relationship.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't ask for that. Right. That wasn't for me. So, right. You know, we have to put shame in its place.
Yes. Right?
Like
yes.
If I did something against you, Camille, I should be ashamed of that because I should know better. Right?
But
when somebody does something to you or at you, you shouldn't be carrying that shame because it does not belong to you. You know, you have to right place that kind of stuff. That's what I feel.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
So those are my five little things for you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a complete pleasure. I know that this is going to be a total blessing to someone out there listening. I always, after the show, I don't do it as much as I used to, but every now and then I'll go on the statistics that will report to you where your listeners are coming from, and they're from all over the world. So I can imagine somebody in
Barbados that'll be listening at midnight, or, you know, somebody clicking on in North Dakota, and you're like, who's listening in North Dakota?
That's awesome. Yeah. I see that sometimes in my podcast, like Australia. I'm like, somebody's listening to me in Australia. That's awesome.
So you guys, I want you to listen up for her podcast, Straight Talk.
No sugar added.
No sugar added. And I'm going to post the link to that in the description of the show. I will also tell you how to find her on social media. And she's an author of a book. You want to talk about your book really quick and where they can buy that?
Yeah, so it's called Hit Me With Your Best Shot, How I Overcame a Hard-Hitting Life. And you can get it really anywhere ebooks are sold, and Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And there's even a couple of copies if you wanted to just borrow a copy at the Norwalk Public Library.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yes, thank you so much, Camille. This was fun.
Yes, it was. What an honor. All right. Well, until next time, thank you so much for being a guest on the Moments of Joy podcast.
It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Amazing. That was powerful on so many levels, and it lets us know that God is able to do and heal us from anything. He can bring us out of anything. She addressed so many things, but I thank God that He is a true deliverer, and no matter what you may find yourself dibbling and dabbling in, and what you may find, what situations you may find yourself stuck in, the reason we share these stories is that so that we can show you that there is a release in God, and that He is able to bring you out, and only through Him can you find healing and deliverance and long life and a true peaceful relationship with Him will put your life back together again. So I thank you for listening today. I hope this has encouraged you. And I want to invite you to follow us on social media, on Instagram at The Moments of Joy Podcast, and on Facebook at The Moments of Joy Podcast. Okay, guys? Well, that's it for today's show. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Moments of Joy podcast. Love you guys. Bye-bye. To receive your joy.